Christopher Long, and you're listening to The Digital Dialogue, a podcast dedicated to cultivating the excellences of dialogue in a digital age. This is episode 61, and today, on the day of DH, I am joined by my colleague here at Penn State, Mark Fisher, who's a lecturer in philosophy and the coordinator of teaching and learning with technology in the philosophy department, as well as the assistant director of the Rock Ethics Institute. And Mark is here to talk with me about a project that we've been working on now for probably about a year, maybe 9 months, and that is the creation of the Public Philosophy Journal. So we wanted to talk a little bit about how we envision the journal operating and why we're so excited about this whole endeavor. And we thought no better time to do that than the day of DH. And so we made a little time today to record this podcast. So welcome, Mark, to the Digital Dialogue.
Thanks.
So maybe you could start by just telling people about how this thing is going to work, what's innovative about the Public Philosophy Journal.
Sure. The basic idea behind the journal is to do what we can to make use of emerging technologies in a way that is going to support the kind of public dialogue concerning publicly relevant issues that we want to support. There are several journals out there there's been a movement towards open access with respect to what are, in other respects, fairly traditionally generated articles. There are also there's also precedent out there for using computers to read the web and to curate various discussions that are going on around the web. But no journal so far has combined the particular elements that we're looking to combine in such a way that the activity, the process of the creation and the dissemination of the content is something that is itself going on in a collaborative fashion and going on in public in a way that in some ways opens up the way that that philosophers can work together and work with other members of the public.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the ways I've been trying to articulate that, and we have as we've been writing about this, articulate that in as clear a way as possible, although now that I've been saying it so many times, I'm not sure how clear it is, but it's clear in my mind. But it's the idea that the Public Philosophy Journal is going to perform public philosophy as a mode of publication. So as part of what we want to do is embody the values of publicness, of openness, of collaboration that we think are critical not only to the nature of digital humanities, but I think also we're committed to this idea that also philosophy has always been a public endeavor, although it has often been cloistered in academies, and that it has a lot to offer the general public it has a lot to learn from the general public as well. And we want to have a structure in the journal that embodies this publicness as a form of publication. So part of what we are going to be doing, as you mentioned, is to use things like Press Forward to read the web, listen for conversations that are relevant and interesting to public philosophy generally, broadly understood, that is, issues that are related to public issues of public concern, and then bring those into an area where they'll be curated by graduate students and brought into, let's say, a daily feed, a weekly feed, and a monthly feed. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how that's going to work.
And not just thinking about the curation process as something that is itself a communal process. That is, it's not just a computer that is spitting stuff out at us. It's also not just one or two people who are deciding, well, these are the most important issues that we want to focus on, so we'll put them into the stream. But we also want to allow the successive stages of that kind of amplification process to involve participation from the community.
Exactly.
So as people are looking at the daily stream, and giving a thumbs up right. or a like to a particular article, then it's achieving a certain kind of status that over the course of the week will then put it in a position to be part of the weekly stream and then part of the monthly stream. And the idea there is that one of the things that we really need is as you've said in other contexts talking about Twitter, a kind of plumbing mechanism for mm-hmm. the web where we are able to we know that there are any number of different things going on at any given right. time that we might be interested in, and there's a process by which communal efforts to draw each other's attention to the most promising ideas that are out there can be an initial stage within a process that then allows us to work up those ideas and articulate them in ways that that perhaps are closer to the standards of scholarly rigor that we look for and we enjoy
right.
And that we think are important when it comes to academic journals.
So two things out of that I think are important to emphasize. One is that we don't want people to have to feel like they need to come into the ecosystem of the Public Philosophy Journal and create a profile there and all that in order to post there and have their work be amplified by
right,
the journal.
Right.
Although we will be having a situation where people will be able to create profiles and that sort of thing as they begin to participate and review and curate, co-curate links from the web
right,
and other
right.
writings.
Right,
so
but you can do it on your own terms first.
Exactly.
And if it's,
so
if
post
it's,
wherever
it's out
you
there,
are,
we'll find it.
Write
right.
on your blog, okay. tweet about it, and we're going to use software like Press Forward to go out and find it. But that's also only one way of getting material to be peer reviewed for the journal. The traditional ways of submission will also be open to, and we'll also at some points maybe have some invited articles based on a certain theme that are beginning to emerge out of a wider conversation that we're listening to on the web.
Right. Yeah. And I think we want to be as inclusive of the various virtues of traditional traditional journal publication as possible, while also respecting that there are importantly new things that we can do. There are importantly different ways that we can interact amongst ourselves as scholars and researchers and with other members of the public through taking advantage of some of these other possibilities.
Yeah, so one of the things that we are going to then implement is an open peer review process. So these are going to be ultimately things that as they get voted up, if they come in that way, or if they get submitted in the traditional way, will then have to be peer-reviewed. They're going to be peer-reviewed. They won't be blind-reviewed,
right.
but they're going to be peer-reviewed in an open format. We're going to be trying to create certain kinds of guidelines and policies for open public scholarly deliberation. We're going to be working with the Center for Democratic Deliberation here at Penn State to help develop those. But maybe you could talk a little bit about how that open peer review process is going to work.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that is another aspect of what we're looking to do with the journal is to model a kind of public discourse that we think is possible. But that we're not yet seeing on the web in the way that we would like to. So the idea would be that that there would be a peer review process where the people who were invited to review the articles would be taking the time, just as in sort of a traditional blind peer review process, to read them carefully, to annotate their copy of the text,
mm-hmm.
to articulate the questions and criticisms, but also to do so in such a way that once those are then made publicly available mm-hmm. After the period of time, the review time, they will be seen and be taken as sort of part of a collegial process
yeah.
of trying to work up certain ideas. And there'll be several different ways in which people will come to have the credentials
right.
Of reviewer. That is, the idea is that we want everybody in the community to feel comfortable commenting. But we want to be able to distinguish between those sort of one-off comments or those interesting questions that are posed by people who just happen by, but maybe don't have the kind of credentials that others might. So we want to sort of come up with a hybrid model that involves both some traditional credentialing.
So things you would get credentialed for are sort of that articles you yourself have published in the field, positions you hold, those traditional things.
Right.
But then also we may be able to, we'll have people who are practitioners in various kinds of ways also maybe getting some certain kinds of credentials.
And then a record of consistent and thoughtful commenting or consistent and thoughtful reviewing. Will be part of your identity in the community, so that when others see your reviews, they'll be able to sort of take a look at your credentials, but then also to make sure that those credentials are the kinds of things that can be recognized by tenure and promotion committees in universities, so that by the time an article reaches the kind of unveiling status after it's gone through several parts of this process, that it will be the functional equivalent of a peer-reviewed journal article in a traditional journal.
It's interesting that you say unveiling, because this is the model that has been promoted by people like Kathleen Fitzpatrick about, is to publish first and then review.
Right.
And so when the article appears ultimately or is unveiled in the Public Philosophy Journal, it will have already been published on somebody's blog or elsewhere, but then appearing in the journal means it has been vetted and gone through a peer review process.
Right.
I want to circle back to that peer review process, because the other element that we have in there is this notion that authors then would have the ability to review reviewers, as well as the rest of the community could review reviewers, so that people who give substantive, helpful, and also critical comments are receiving feedback about the quality of their comments and getting a certain amount of credit for being a thoughtful and collegial and rigorous.
Right. And I guess we're also toying with the idea, at least, of giving a certain amount of credit for number of pages read, so that people are tempted to read carefully first, digest, and reflect before commenting.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things we've been thinking a lot about as well. Okay, how can we use these technologies to cultivate those values and virtues that we think are important? Slow reading, Technology is always thought of as, well, it's too much information coming at you too quickly, and there will probably be a dimension of that in this journal with regard to the daily feeds and things like that. There's going to be a lot of material that computers are going to be delivering to us.
Yeah, and I think that draws attention to the importance of thoughtful design with respect to the digital environment that we want to produce, because so much of what is coming at you is a design decision on the basis of the people who are thinking about it. And so if we can combine as much as we can in terms of availability to added information or extra information at the reader's will, so that it's not just coming at them, it's not overwhelming them, but it is available and easily accessible in ways that don't create a kind of whirlpool effect of being kicked out to other places and then kicked somewhere else, but sort of the ability to maintain, stay in frame while calling up and putting away access to other people's comments or access to extended footnotes or... So again, to use some of these stereotypes to go against the grain and say that although there is a certain way in which fast reading is encouraged by what we see on the web, there's a way in which these tools can be just as productive to help us and remind us that slow reading is
possible. And we're going to, one of the things, this is a collaboration with Matrix, which is a digital humanities and social science center at Michigan State University, and Dean Rehberger leads Matrix, and he's and been working closely with us on this. We're grateful for the work that they're doing on it, especially with regard to the user interface and that sort of thing as we begin to develop that. But one of the things that Dean emphasizes, and I think that's been good for us to be thinking about, is, you know, computers are really good at certain kinds of things. They're reading the entire web, they can do that now. So let's use them for that sort of thing. But then let's use humans for the other kind, the things that we're good at, the slow, careful reading, deliberative responding, and collaborative writing. And maybe that's the next phase of this, and that we should talk about, because that's a piece. This piece of collaborative writing is a piece that hasn't really, I don't think, been done in a lot of other venues. Certainly not in the venue of philosophy. We see that some of this curating and amplifying process that we've been talking about has been done by journals like the Digital Humanities Now, which sort of does this reading of the web and curating interesting articles, and then that are then published in the Journal of Digital Humanities. It's a great model that we're going to be working closely with. But one of the things we want to add to that is this notion of developmental writing, development and collaborative writing. So coming out of that review process. So it's kind of our version of revise and resubmit, but it's not sending things back to revise and resubmit back in by yourself in your library in your office alone, but can we set the stage for a collaborative writing?
Right, and it continues to be an open and a public kind of process there, so that together with the idea of publish and then filter,
right.
The idea is that instead of waiting until everything is in perfect final form before allowing other people into the process, or instead of only collaborating with those few who you've worked with in the past, or who you decide on the basis of personal relationships, you know, maybe it'd be great to write a paper together. There can be a place where once you've shared your ideas, it's possible that others who are interested in similar things will be able to pick those up, and the two of you can begin that collaborative process. And it could also be the case that more senior scholars in the field or people who have more experience in policy or in the particular area that you're working on could then help guide you as an author who has some promising but not yet fully polished ideas, or some ideas where there's lacking some important details. So that is itself happening in a way that is at the same time public and so that the ideas that you're working on could potentially be effective and could potentially lead others to take an interest in the project well before you feel that you've gotten to the point, or well before the journal editors feel that the article has gotten to the point where it can stand as a standalone article.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, so I think that this aspect of collaborative writing, developmental collaborative writing, is going to be something that'll set the journal apart from a lot of other academic journals. The idea would be that we bring in some experts, or we ask people who are making substantive comments on one another's blogs to come into this collaborative writing space to spend some time working together to craft something of some substance. So I think it could take on some different forms. A younger scholar or might have a mentor or somebody who's working with them, not to become a co-author, but just sort of working with them to help flesh out certain ideas. But then you might also just have this sort of model of a couple of one or two other people who are co-authors working together on an article that came out of some blog post that we have now seen as a theme from around the web, that we thought that would be good if they could come up with something co-authored. And then that would then, once that's ready, that would then filter back to the peer review process and be reviewed again, and would potentially appear in the journal. We also want to add an element of face-to-face collaborative writing. So we've been working with the Public Philosophy Conference. There's a group of Public Philosophy Network, and they have a conference every, we have a conference every 18 months.
18 months or so, right?
And we were thinking about taking those as opportunities to maybe have a pre-conference writing workshop with people where they could have face-to-face meetings, and that goes with what you were saying right. earlier about trying to take the virtues and values of both in-person, face-to-face scholarship, paper scholarship, and digital scholarship and bring them together into the journal.
Right, and then I would also add that in both of those, in either of those contexts or both of those contexts, it's possible that what started out as collaborative writing right. on a single piece could turn into a series of articles where people who started working together end up taking very divergent positions right. on the issue, or where So what ends up getting published out of any particular session of collaborative writing could be something that looks more like, okay, a co-authored article that has a single voice, mm-hmm. or it could be a series of smaller pieces that right. are exploring various positions that one could take on the issue.
And have a dialogical dimension, too. I mean, it could
exactly.
be up. I mean, that's one of the
exactly.
real advantages of publishing in this digital medium, because we'll be able to not only have those written texts, but there may be multimodal scholarship, video, podcasts, other kinds of things that could find their way into a published article in the sense of appearing in the journal. And I think that's one of the exciting things from I think our perspective, is that we can have this multimodal thing. Things can be timely because they will be we'll be able to turn things around relatively swiftly depending on what issues are emerging. And then we'll be able to have them appear in the journal in a way that has a history of the process by which they came into existence in the first place. So we'll be
right.
able to publish the process along with the product, and that, again, embodies the values that we're trying to think about, which is it's not just the end product that matters. It is the process by which we came to it and the conversation that we had along the way.
Right, and this is something that emerged at the workshop at yeah. Emory, the Public Philosophy Conference workshop that we ran on the journal. We want to have this this continuous flow aspect where works in progress are being continually worked up and where one can track the history of the development of the text. But we also want to make sure that we have I think what one of the participants called the event. Right.
right.
We don't want it to be the case that you come and you can't. Okay, is this the article or is that the article? We want to have something that distinguishes the finished product from the process, but also allows us to embed that product in the process and get a much better sense of how it came to fruition. And then also, I think that in that way, it will be easier for others to come along and pick up on, not just start with the finished product, but see how it's developed, spot different ways along the way that it could have developed in alternate directions,
right.
and perhaps take off from an earlier draft and push mm-hmm. in a different direction than the direction the author right. ultimately ends up going, but could be.
And so, I mean, as you can, as listeners can hear, this is a really very ambitious project, and we have no illusions about how difficult it's going to be. I think first of all, as you and I, Mark, have always been saying, community is hard to build, and that's part of what's going to depend on that. So if you're listening and this sounds like something you'd be interested in participating in, we do invite you to come to publicphilosophyjournal.org and sign in to under the participate heading. You'll see a link to a form that you can fill out to add your Twitter account, add your other information and why you're interested in the journal, and we'll be sure to have you on our list of people to work with, because we are going to need some help. But I mean, we're really facing facing challenges on a lot of levels. One is from the Academy generally, we're doing something digital, so that's already a hurdle we have to jump over. We're going to have to be more rigorous than otherwise, just because we're dealing with a digital medium. We are dealing with a discipline like philosophy, in which rigor is important. A certain kind of rigor is important. We want to answer that, but we also want to expand the idea of rigor. we're trying to perform public philosophy as a way of doing this, which is a certain kind of approach to philosophy, or at least a way of doing philosophy, a way of practicing philosophy that is not, let's just say, universally accepted by others who are practicing philosophy in different kinds of ways. So that's going to be a challenge. You know, how does philosophy as a discipline, and how do we as philosophers engage a wider public in a way that both engages the public in a substantive way, but also does, but also doesn't violate or diminish the sophistication of what we're trying to talk about, and that I think is going to involve reciprocity, namely entering into this endeavor with a kind of willingness to learn, which philosophers haven't always had embodied that. we're laughing about this, but I mean, it's so there's a lot of challenges.
Yeah, and I think the collaborative aspect. Yeah. Philosophers aren't generally trained to co-author papers or to work in interdisciplinary ways. Although that's becoming, yeah, you know, more and more philosophers are taking an interest, and I think that's something that's important to point to as well. I agree that. All of the things that you pointed to are challenges. Yes. And the more we talk about this and the more we get excited about this, the greater they seem in a certain sense. Yeah. Because the more commitment we have and the, right, and the more we can feel how what this really could be.
Right.
And so we recognize that there are a lot of things that we're going to need to do in terms of the community aspect. But we should also, I think, keep in mind that we're not being forced to create community whole cloth, and that, right, and that we are really picking up on some currents that are out there, and some practices that people are that we're beginning to see become more and more common. Yep. in various areas. They're not always going on in traditional philosophy, right, departments. Some of them are. Some of them are going on in interdisciplinary institutes, like, mm-hmm, the Rock Ethics Institute, from which we take sort of some of the model for the kind of work that we want to be doing.
So the Rock is going to be a partner.
And the Rock is partnering, right?
And
right.
Two traditional philosophy departments at philosophy, right, at Penn State and philosophy at Michigan, right, State, right, are going to be involved.
Right.
But then
there are a lot of really sharp people who at some point during their philosophical training decided that that some avenue other than a traditional academic philosophy job was what they wanted to pursue in order to do the things that were really important to them. And I think if we can create an environment where input from them is welcome, and where they feel like they can contribute back to pick up those conversations, right, with philosophers that, right, they
and bring their own experience.
And bring their own, yeah, subsequent experience to them, then, yeah, I think we both stand to benefit quite,
yeah,
a bit from,
yeah,
from that.
And then that's part of what makes it exciting. And whenever I start thinking about those challenges, I do think about the strands and the trends that you're mentioning. And they come from various areas, partly within philosophy, with the Public Philosophy Network and an increasingly strong community that's emerging, committed to doing public philosophy in really a diverse kind of a set of in the diversity and of range of meanings that entails, but also in the digital humanities community, where,
of course,
there's, you know, a lot more sort of commitment to the values that we were talking about. I mean, there is at least a strong aspect of those commitments, of these values of collaboration, of publicness, of open access, and these things that we want the journal to embody itself. So, I mean, I think we're approaching this as a digital humanities endeavor, thinking of the digital humanities not so much as a discipline unto or a subdiscipline of the humanities, but as a set of values and virtues of collaboration, of publicness, of open access that we're trying to bring forward into our discipline of philosophy.
Right, right. And I think at the same time it's important, at least for me, I think it is also for you, to recognize that it's not as if we are inventing or discovering some new set of, right, values, but rather what we're doing is working to see how it is that emerging technologies allow us to continue to support the traditional values of a liberal arts education, yeah, liberal arts scholarship, right, public research institutions that that a lot of things that appear new, that appear from some perspectives to be out on the lunatic fringe, are really ways of recommitting ourselves to certain fundamental commitments within the liberal arts, within public universities,
and within the discipline of philosophy.
And within the discipline of philosophy as well.
Right.
The way of seeing ways in which people who have the kind of training that we have and the kind of training that other people that we've been talking with have can also at the same time be working on the process of moving these technologies in the directions that are most consonant with supporting those values is an important part of our project as well.
So if any of you are interested, as we mentioned, in participating in the Public Philosophy Journal, please do visit publicphilosophyjournal.org, and we will be sure to be in contact with you. And thanks, Mark, for coming on the Digital Dialogue. It's been
thanks for having me.
Yeah. So this has been the Digital Dialogue. Dialogue is produced under a Creative Commons Share and Share Alike license. I invite you to visit us on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/digitaldialogue and on the blog at www.la.psu.edu/chrislong. This has been the Digital Dialogue.